Hello, my name's Dave Emery, and this is For the Record program number 336, titled Walking the Snake, Part 3. This is being recorded on November 18th of the year 2001, and it's another broadcast dealing with the subject of the terrible terrorist blitzkrieg of September 11th of 2001. This is a very complex subject, and simply due to the limitations of time, we haven't got anywhere near enough space here to talk about all of the aspects of this enormous and terrifying event. I refer interested listeners to several different sources, all of them on the web. First of all, sister station WFMU-FM in Jersey City, New Jersey, has a website, wfmu.org/Dave Emery, one word, DaveEmory. That is archiving the For the Record programs on Real Audio. More recent programs are streaming at that address, again, wfmu.org/Dave Emery. Older programs are available for download only on Real Audio at a longer URL, and the vast bulk of the For the Record programs are already online. And there is also a CD and tape duplication service called Spitfire. They have a Real Audio-equipped website that carries the latest programs going out to the stations, including WFMU, that carry this program. Their website is www.spitfirelist.com. In the For the Record section, there are not only links to the two WFMU websites, but there are also descriptions of the For the Record programs and all of the programs recorded to date, 325 through 335 in the For the Record series, have their descriptions on the web, and the descriptions are annotated and meticulously sourced. So if listeners find this to be a complex and overwhelming presentation, then please check the Spitfire website for the annotated and sourced information. Also, listeners who are not online and who miss programs can contact Spitfire and get a hold of other programs in the series, either on CD and or tape. Now, let's proceed directly into the subject material. This is, of course, dealing with, again, the book Serpent's Walk, or at least it's relevant to the book Serpent's Walk. That is a Nazi tract dealing with the takeover of the United States in the mid-21st century. That takeover takes place following the SS and the Third Reich going underground. That happened. Building up an enormous economic engine. That happened. Buying into the American opinion-forming media. That is happening. And infiltrating the U.S. military and national security establishment. And I said there is evidence that that has happened as well. Following a biological warfare attack on the United States, of course, we know that would never happen. I'm being facetious. There, martial law is declared, and we're moving in that direction, and the underground Reich takes over the United States. It is the book that is Serpent's Walk, put out by National Vanguard Books, is far more than the novel it purports to be, in my opinion. It is like the Nazi tract Serpent's Walk and like Mein Kampf, before it a blueprint for what is going to happen, and it is a manifesto for the worldwide Nazi movement. The book The Turner Diaries, also published by National Vanguard Books, also purports to be a novel, but it was also the role model for the Nazi terror group The Order in the 1980s, and for Timothy McVeigh and company in the Oklahoma City bombing. Now, in past discussions of the Underground Reich in its various manifestations, one of the aspects I've covered is the liaison and the utilization by the Underground Reich of new generation Nazis. I don't like the term neo-Nazis, not only in Germany and elsewhere in Europe, but also in the United States. They, in turn, are liaison, that they have liaisoned with, among other elements, Islamo-fascist or Islamic extremist elements around the world. This has been going on for decades. One of the individuals who constitutes a link between Al-Qaeda, the apparent stock manipulation that took place in connection with September 11th attacks, at least it's being investigated in connection with that, and also the Odessa network that was present in Egypt under Nasser, is Ahmed Ney Alfred Huber of Al-Taqwa Management. That individual is a major focal point of For the Record 335, and I refer interested listeners to that broadcast and its source description on the Spitfire website. We're going to be taking a look in this broadcast at not only German connections to the events of September 11th, but also German connections to Islamic terrorists, and in turn, apparent liaison connections between that milieu and American so-called neo-Nazis and white supremacists. In For the Record program number 330, we took at links between the AMIA bombing, the September 11th milieu and Al-Qaeda, and the Iran-Contra scandal, and two bombings that took place in Argentina, in particular the AMIA bombing in 1994, and, among other incidents, the 1995 Oklahoma City bombing. There are a number of evidentiary tributaries connecting those events, and Terry Nichols is Timothy McVeigh's co-conspirator, or one of them, is facing a state trial, having already been convicted on federal charges in the bombing. Research credit on the following goes to a member of a listening audience who got this from the Indianapolis Star of November 3rd of 2001. This comes from their website at www.indystar.com. It's by James Patterson, and its headline, Justice Department Won't Let Agent Testify. It reads in part, while Terry Nichols, already convicted on federal charges in the 1995 Oklahoma City bombing, returned to court Monday to face the state's case against him, the government was squirming to squelch evidence that Nichols and Timothy McVeigh did not act by themselves. Nichols' attorney asked Judge Ray Dean Linder if former FBI agent Dan Vogel could testify that he had received 22 affidavits from Oklahomans who had seen McVeigh in the company of Middle Eastern men in the months, weeks, and days leading up to the bombing and on the day of the attack. This sentence again. Nichols' attorneys asked Judge Ray Dean Linder if former FBI agent Dan Vogel could testify that he had received 22 affidavits from Oklahomans who had seen McVeigh in the company of Middle Eastern men in the months, weeks, and days leading up to the bombing and on the day of the attack. Nichols' attorney, Barbara Bergman, said Agent Vogel, who has since retired, also wanted to testify that he had sent the 22 affidavits he got from former TV investigative reporter Jana Davis to FBI agent Henry C. Gibbons. But the FBI has not shared those affidavits with anyone and may have destroyed them. On Monday, Judge Linder ruled that Vogel could not testify for Nichols regarding the affidavits because the Justice Department doesn't want the former FBI agent to be heard. The ruling was that he, Linder, would not permit him, Agent Vogel, to testify because the Department of Justice has taken the position that it would not authorize his testimony, unquote, Bergman said Thursday. Is our own Justice Department so terrified of the truth that it won't let a retired FBI agent testify about affidavits regarding the Oklahoma City bombing? Can the government legally do this? It can try, Bergman says. In, among other broadcasts, For the Record number 88, we took a look at allegations that, among other individuals, white supremacist Dennis Mahone, with links running from the LAPD to Germany, to the White Aryan Resistance Organization, elements of which were implicated in the aforementioned AMIA bombing. We took a look at allegations that Dennis Mahone was, in fact, connected with elements in Iraq and other Middle Eastern / Islamo-fascist elements. Those were never fully explored. There was a recent article which discussed one of the German evidentiary tributaries running in the direction of the September 11th attacks, and interestingly, and perhaps significantly, a number of individuals of Islamic extraction who are being investigated in connection with the German connections to this event and in connection with September 11th are individuals who are located in Oklahoma. And one of them roomed with somebody who was alleged by some sources to be one of the hijackers. The following article is an AP story from the San Francisco Chronicle of Thursday, November 15th of 2001. It's headlined, FBI says 20th hijacker held by INS on September 11th. And, skipping down, German authorities have issued international arrest warrants for three suspected accomplices of the hijackers, Bin al-Shib, Saeed Bahaji, a German national, and Zakaria Essebar of Morocco. All three left Hamburg shortly before the September 11th attacks. That individual, by the way, is Ramzi Omar, also known as Ramzi Bin al-Shib. Skipping down. In a related development, the president of the Pakistani Student Association at the University of Oklahoma in Norman will face immigration charges today at a hearing in Oklahoma City. Neighbors said that the student leader, Mohammed Yassin Haider, H-A-I-D-E-R, 22, had been detained on November 8th at a university-owned apartment complex. Heider, by the way, probably coincidentally, but possibly not, spelled exactly like Jörg Haider, the so-called yuppie fascist in Austria. Haider, a junior majoring in electrical engineering, was a neighbor of Hussein al-Attas and Mukarram Ali, two University of Oklahoma students who were in custody for questioning in the investigation into the World Trade Center attacks. The authorities want to know what Attas and Ali can tell them about Mousawi, who was arrested in August on immigration charges. Attas once roomed with Mousawi in Norman. Again, nothing conclusive here, but it's interesting in light of the affidavits that apparently the Justice Department does not want to come to light about alleged Middle Eastern accomplices of Timothy McVeigh. Not something which should come as a great surprise to someone familiar with what Kevin Coogan, author of Dreamer of the Day, has termed the post-war fascist international. But it's interesting here that we have Oklahoma tributaries to the September 11th event running through, among other places, Germany. And, of course, in connection with Oklahoma City, we took a look at the profound German connections to that event, chiefly Timothy McVeigh's alleged mentor, Andreas Strassmeier, the son of Gunter Strassmeier, Helmut Kohl's chief of staff, and the architect of German reunification. Another indication of just how profound the German connections to this event may very well be, the Financial Times of Thursday, November 15th of 2001, carried the following story by Hugh Williamson in Wiesbaden. It's headlined, Al-Qaeda camps, quote, train 70,000 in terror, unquote. And that's a whole lot more than have been apprehended so far or are likely to be killed in Afghanistan. Continuing, or beginning reading this article in part, at least 70,000 Islamic militants have been trained in camps associated with Osama bin Laden in Afghanistan, Pakistan, and other countries in recent years, according to the head of Germany's Federal Criminal Agency. Ulrich Kirsten, the head of the BKA agency, said these trainees came from, quote, 50 different states, unquote, and posed a significant terrorist threat. In warnings that a new phase of international terrorism was imminent, voiced at a rare public meeting of senior U.S. and German security and intelligence specialists in Germany yesterday, Michael Rollins, R-O-L-I-N-C-E, the head of the FBI's anti-terrorism section, confirmed that, quote, thousands of people, unquote, had passed through the camps. We may be hearing from them in the future. One of the reasons why many of the evidentiary tributaries run through Germany, aside from Germany's profound links to the underground Reich, is the fact that under German law, documented terrorists, can only be arrested if they're plotting against Germany. In other words, and in the case of Pan Am 103, the first World Trade Center attack, the Oklahoma City bombing, and this attack, there are evidentiary tributaries running in the direction of Germany, and there are some connecting all of those different events. In Germany, one can only arrest even a known terrorist from another country if they're plotting against another country, not Germany. Now that, by the way, ladies and gentlemen, is homeland protection. The following article is from the San Francisco Chronicle of Saturday, November 3rd of 2001. This is an article by Eric Geiger of the Chronicle Foreign Service, headlined, September 11th, a wake-up call for Germany, subtitled 100 Sleepers, unquote, in country's major cities. It runs in part as follows. The German security agents crouching in front of a Lutheran church hall in Hamburg were frustrated. Inside the crowded auditorium, Mullah Abbas Akhund, the Taliban's health minister, was singing the praises of a man already regarded to be one of the world's most dangerous terrorists, Osama bin Laden. Quote, there was nothing we could do except jot down car license numbers of members of the audience, unquote, said one of the agents recalled recently about the incident in January. That's January of 2001. Despite a UN travel embargo, the mullah mysteriously obtained a visitor's visa from the German embassy in Pakistan and was in the country legally, skipping down. Until recently, German intelligence services were barred by law from passing on information about a suspected foreign terrorist to authorities in his country of origin, lest his rights be violated. Moreover, any formal criminal investigations of suspected terrorists were allowed only if there was sufficient evidence that they might commit acts of terrorism on German soil. They were immune from prosecution if confining themselves to spreading propaganda or providing logistical support to terrorist groups abroad. Above all, A law gave legal protection and virtual immunity to foreign religious organizations, an easily obtainable status that potentially provided excellent cover for terrorist groups. Again, a truly terrifying aspect in this particular investigation, and one thing that certainly would make Germany a very fertile breeding ground for these kinds of activities. I would note that one of the epicenters in this event appears to have been Hamburg, one of the Bush family Third Reich front companies that was confiscated by the alien property custodian, which also became a major functionary of the Bormann organization in the post-war period, was the Hamburg-America line, and what we may be looking at in connection with September 11th is an altogether different type of Hamburg-America line. Perhaps not unconnected with the first, and both, oddly enough, connected to the Bushes. The Wall Street Journal of Wednesday, November 14th of 2001, had an article by Ian Johnson headlined, "In Hamburg Terror Probe, Grim Lessons," subtitled, "Investigation of Atos Cell, Suspect in U.S. Attack, Blue Crucial Leads." This reads in part, "After 2 months and no arrests, German officials are preparing to wind down their investigation into the Hamburg terrorist cell that apparently led the September 11th attacks on New York and Washington, according to officers close to the case." Skipping down. According to members of a parliamentary oversight committee that met on September 16th, the Federal Office for the Protection of the Constitution asked its Hamburg office a year ago to place under surveillance Marienstrasse 54, where Messrs. Atta and Shehi had lived. The Hamburg office, however, mistakenly concluded that it was an old tip dating to the 1998 bust of a man tied to Osama bin Laden, Mamdou Mahmoud Salim, who had a business partner in Hamburg with ties to the Marienstrasse apartment. In fact, it was a new tip that the federal office had received, and another chance to bust the September 11th hijackers was missed. Now, however, the decision to concentrate power in the BKA's hands has also led to mistakes. And again, how many of these are mistakes and how many of them are deliberate obfuscations by infiltrators within the German national security establishment is anybody's guess. I would note, although we haven't got time to completely cover it in this broadcast, there are many elements of the German national security establishment who are sincerely honorable and anti-fascist and democratic with a small d, as is the case with the United States. But I believe, as is also the case with the United States, those elements are being subverted and actively frustrated, and in some cases perhaps even killed, by the pro-fascist elements within the German national security establishment. And again, I believe that's a parallel with the United States. Skipping down, earlier this month, BKA officers, by the way, it's the Bundeskriminalamt, the German equivalent of the FBI, beginning again. Earlier this month, BKA officers started investigating a small airstrip in Bad Segeberg, S-E-G-E-B-E-R-G, a small town near Hamburg, but only after they had read about it in a German news magazine. Hamburg police say they'd known for years that the strip's owner was Iranian and had allegedly given flying lessons to Middle Eastern students. Quote, "All we were asked to do was to follow orders from the BKA," unquote, complained a Hamburg police officer. Following orders in a way that leads to mass human destruction, not an altogether new situation for German security officials. I would note that another Iranian-owned, and by the way, I want to focus listeners' attention on the concept of Islamo-fascism, and rather than focusing on these Islamo-fascist elements and their liaison with Western fascist elements, rather than focusing on a country of origin, be it Iraq, Iran, Libya, Saudi Arabia, Germany, or the United States, I think one should focus on the element of continuity here, which is fascism and its various strata, such as the petroleum industry, the Bormann organization, elements of American heavy industry and finance for decades running, and national security connections, because there is a documented connection between Islamo-fascist elements in various countries and the underground Reich and the milieu that we have seen apparently at work in the September 11th events. The following article is from a very reactionary American publication. One should be very careful about this. However, the author who wrote this is a very credible author, and the article itself appears to be very, very well documented. Hence, I'm using it. But one should understand a most emphatic caveat about the publication itself. However, the author, Kenneth R. Timmerman, the author of The Death Lobby, about the arming of Iraq that we've spoken about in the past, is a very credible author, and this is obviously a scholarly and well-researched article. But watch out for the publication. The publication is The American Spectator. This article is copyright 1995 by The American Spectator, December of 1995. It's by Kenneth R. Timmerman and headlined, Islamic Iran's American Base. Now, this talks about the Mustaza Fan Foundation, formerly the Alavi organization. That was basically the Pahlavi Foundation in the United States that was confiscated by the Iranian Islamic fundamentalists who took over in 1979. This organization was, for all intents and purposes, run by a fellow named Mohsen Rafik Dost, the minister of Iran's Revolutionary Guards, who, not incidentally, took the U.S. hostages from the American embassy in Tehran in 1979. That hostage-taking and holding led, it has become known, and it's the collaboration between the Iranian extremists and the Reagan-Bush campaign has become known as the October Surprise, and it led to the election of Ronald Reagan and the younger George Bush in 1980. Now, note the connection between the Revolutionary Guards implicated in the Iranian-U.S. collusion of 1980 and before, as we've seen, using Fatah Mansour's historical research, and also terrorists linked to Iran and owning a private airfield outside of Hamburg, and the smuggling of nuclear materials, and also the propagation of anti-Semitic literature written by the individual Ahmed Ney Alfred Huber, who has links to the Al-Qaeda organization, who sits on the board of directors of an institution that is allegedly a funding source for Al-Qaeda, namely the Al-Taqwa Foundation that we looked at in For the Record 3335, and also that is to say, Ahmed Huber has links to the German NPD, a German neo-Nazi organization associated with the American National Alliance. He also has links going back to the old Odessa network in Nasser's Egypt under Otto Skorzeny. And this is a very, very interesting individual indeed. Ahmed Huber, nay, Alfred Huber, one of the links between the Underground Reich of the past, the Underground Reich of the present, the economic Bormann organization, Al-Qaeda, and Islamofascism, and so-called neo-Nazis, both in the United States and Germany. Again, Islamic Iran's American Base by Kenneth R. Timmerman, The American Spectator, 1295, about Rafik Dost and the Alavi Foundation and the Revolutionary Guards of hostage-taking fame. It is for intents and purposes, speaking of the Mustaza Fan Foundation, it is for intents and purposes a multi-billion dollar manufacturing and trading conglomerate run by Mohsen Rafik Dost, former minister of Iran's brutal Revolutionary Guards and a key figure in Iran's international terrorist apparatus. Skipping down, talking about that organization's links with Hezbollah. In congressional testimony on September 27th, Philip Wilcox, State Department Coordinator for Counterterrorism, blamed Hezbollah and Iran for the July 1994 bombing against a Jewish community center in Buenos Aires that killed 90 people. Argentine government investigators have recently discovered new evidence linking an official at the Iranian embassy in Buenos Aires to the bombing. That is the aforementioned AMIA bombing, with alleged links to Al-Qaeda through the aforementioned Imad Mughanaya, whose links go back to the Iran-Contra scandal, and Manzur El-Kassar, and elements of white Aryan resistance linked to the AMIA bombing. Still more. In addition to VENA, spelled V-E-N-A Industries in Germany, Iran owns a private airfield in Hartenholm near the northern port of Hamburg, which U.S. intelligence officials say is being used to ferry nuclear equipment purchased in Austria and the Czech Republic to Iran. The equipment is flown into Hartenholm on small private planes, then loaded into Iran Air cargo planes and sent on to Tehran. The German authorities, when queried about this traffic earlier this year by the New York Times, said, quote, "It is almost impossible to trace the material being smuggled out by the Iranians," unquote. Now, about links between this and note the small airfield near Hamburg owned by an Iranian. That would appear to be either the same airfield or another one that was alluded to in the previous Wall Street Journal article, which alluded to Bad Segeberg. Skipping down, of this milieu's connection to the aforementioned Ahmed Huber. Speaking of an Islamic center in Potomac, Maryland, that is sponsored by the Mustazafan Foundation. At the center's bookstore, one can purchase the original version of Ayatollah Khomeini's fatwa, or religious order, condemning British author Salman Rushdie to death for having blasphemed against Iran. The fatwa instructs Muslims throughout the world that it is a, quote, religious duty, unquote, to assassinate Rushdie. The bookstore also sells videotaped speeches by anti-Semitic fanatics such as the Swiss-based Ahmed Huber, who extols Ayatollah Khomeini as the living continuation of Adolf Hitler. And I would note that Ahmed Huber was associated in Egypt under Nasser with Johann von Leers, who ran Nasser's Institute for the Study of Zionism. Johann von Leers, a major functionary of what I call the Underground Reich, was the anti-Semitic propaganda chief for Joseph Goebbels' propaganda ministry under the Third Reich, and I don't think it requires too great a leap of faith in light of the worldwide links of Ahmed Huber, including links to South Africa, to perhaps see Ahmed Huber as carrying on the Goebbels/anti-Semitic/Islamo-fascist/Underground Reich propaganda that von Leers had specialized in under Joseph Goebbels. We're going to continue with this discussion in the next half of the broadcast. I've alluded to other websites from which one can get information. First of all, For the Record programs are streaming at sister station WFMU's website at wfmu.org/Dave Emory, D-A-V-E-E-M-O-R-Y. Make sure that you've got the most recent of their websites, because there is at least one older manifestation of that website that is not completely up to date. They may just have simply redone that, because the last program on that is October 30th. There is another longer URL with the vast majority of the For the Record programs streaming, and that is linked to the other WFMU website. Both FMU websites are linked to the website of Spitfire, S-P-I-T-F-I-R-E, at www.spitfirelist.com. Spitfire's website is equipped with real audio, and you can hear the most recent For the Record programs being distributed in the For the Record section of the Spitfire website. Perhaps even more importantly, there are annotated descriptions of the For the Record programs completely up to date in the case of September 11th on the Spitfire website. The programs dealing with 9/11 are For the Record 325 through 335. Spitfire also sells CDs and tapes for people who aren't online. You can write to them at P.O. Box 1179, Ben Lomond, California, 95005. Email mail, M-A-I-L, at spitfirelist.com. This concludes Side A of For the Record program number 336. This is being recorded on November 18th of 2001. My name's Dave Emery. Thanks for listening.